Hello and welcome to the brand new BRC podcast, Radio Retail, with me, your host, William Madison. Radio Retail is your one-stop shop for retail industry news, covering everything from political developments, trade negotiations, trends, insights, and everything in between. This week on the podcast, we'll have an emergency talk with Aidan Connolly on the potential triggering of Article 16 and what that means for retailers. We'll also be talking to Sophie DeSalis on how retail is looking leading into the Golden Quarter and protections for retail workers against the rise of violent crime. But first, we'll be talking to Helen Dickinson, Chief Executive of the BRC, on COP26 and what the retail industry needs to do to be a force for good. We hope you enjoy the show. So I'm here now with our own Helen Dickinson, Chief Executive of the BRC. Helen, how's it going?
Hi, William. I am very well, thank you. I'm a recovering COVID patient, but I'm feeling much better, so it's all good.
Oh, no. Oh, God. Well, yeah, I hope you're feeling all right. Just jumping into things, a couple of weeks ago, we ran the Climate Action Week, which had events sort of showcasing the work of our Climate Action Roadmap and how retailers can get involved. For listeners who might not already know, what is the Climate Action Roadmap and what's it trying to achieve?
So the Climate Action Roadmap is it's lots of things. It's a movement behind it all, really. It's a real mobilization of lots of people from across the industry behind a shared aspiration that we need to move faster towards that goal of net zero. So if you look at the retail industry's impact on the climate as a whole, so specifically thinking about carbon, we all, as members of the public, about 30% of our own footprint, our own individual carbon footprint, is generated by the goods that we buy. So that means that the retail industry and what it does has a great both challenge but also opportunity to make a really big difference on that journey towards net zero. So here in the UK, the government has set a target of net zero by 2050. We have an aspiration that's even closer than that of net zero by 2040. And that involves taking out that 30% and turning it from 200 million tons of carbon equivalent a year impact by the retail industry here in the UK down to net zero. And so the Climate Action Roadmap is 70, nearly 80 retailers now coming together to work out how to do that, because we haven't got all the answers, but really to collaborate with each other and drive change.
And it's obviously, you know, it's not just us that are looking at this topic at the moment. Climate action's top of the agenda, well, across society at the moment. I know you've mm-hmm. recently returned from COP26 in Glasgow. Mm-hmm. So what were you doing there, and what are the things that we've sort of learned over the last couple of weeks?
Of course, I was there to tell everybody about the Climate Action Roadmap and to try and get more and more people involved. And actually, you know, certainly from a trade association point of view, we're really quite excited, actually, because one of the things that the UN has done is announced a retail campaign and specifically and a whole initiative around getting trade associations to kind of gear up and support their members. And we're the first international trade association to be recognised as what they're calling a race to zero accelerator. So a body that can help move things even more quickly. And that was announced during COP. So that's fantastic.
That's brilliant. Yeah.
The Australians are there as well. So it's all happening. It's all happening. But it was absolutely intriguing sort of being there and seeing what was going on. Because I went, you know, for two reasons, to see and feel it myself, to talk about the roadmap. But what really struck me being there is two things, really. The first is the importance of sort of keeping everyone together in the same conversation, because I was talking to lots of people there and they were talking about stuff that, I sort of think I'm sort of reasonably up to speed on most things that I don't know and even understand, right? Mm. And I think, you know, with an agenda that's like as big and as important as this, if we end up sort of in a conversation where only the sort of people who are like deep specialists are involved in it, then we're not going to get the momentum that we need. Mm. So that was sort of one of the things that struck me. And then the other was that this is all great talking about it, but particularly you talk to people in retail, they just want, they want practical stuff. They want to know what they need to do. They want to know where to prioritize. They want to know where to start. They want to know how to think about it. They just want to get moving. They don't want to talk about it. So it's all about the delivery. So having a language that everybody is involved in and kind of gets what's going on, and getting things moving and started and underway were the two sort of overarching things that struck me in spending time in Glasgow with all these very clever people from lots of countries.
Yeah, I mean, that point there about people being very wary of business leaders and politicians talking a good game, but not necessarily following through on the promises. Obviously, there's been a lot of momentum built in the last few weeks and months. In terms of this, well, in the sustainability space, but what's the BRC's vision for the future? And probably more specifically, how does the roadmap help in terms of concrete steps we can make in the retail industry?
So that overarching vision, as we were talking about before, is for net zero by 2040. That's not just for the own operations of a retail business, but it's right down the supply chain, so what's called scope three. And also thinking about influencing the behaviours of customers, so the other end, so upstream and downstream. So the way that we want to mobilise, or we're working already actually with the members that are directly involved, those 70, 80 or so companies, is across five different pathways, each of them looking in much more detail at the sort of data that's needed, the impact on your own operations, so the energy that you procure to make your warehouses function, or if you've got stores, to keep them warm or to light them. Thirdly, around the actual logistics and moving goods around, so that's all about trucks and lorries. And then fourthly, supply chain. And then fifthly, about influencing customers. So the whole thing is all about collaboration and delivery, and understanding what best practice looks like, sharing experiences and trying to solve problems, because not everybody does know the answer to everything. I mean, you take something like logistics. So while electric vehicles and light goods vehicles, the technology is sort of fairly certain that everybody knows that they need to transition to an electrical fleet. And we need more charging points and they need to be more spread around the country, but it's kind of certain what the path is. Whereas to take something like HGVs, so these are the big lorries that are driving up and down the country, There isn't that framework. It's not certain. Is it electrical? Is it hydrogen? What is that solution? If people don't want to invest tens of thousands of pounds in, you know, one, let alone tens or hundreds of new lorries, and then find out that the technology ended up as VHS, or, you know, whichever path it went down was a different one to the one that you thought. So they're big bets that people were going to be needing to take. So we need to really highlight where there's certainty, what people need to do, and where there isn't, work through what those best solutions. And that requires retailers talking to other retailers, that requires retailers talking to their suppliers, that requires retailers and suppliers and every other industry talking to government about what needs to change. And our job is to try and convene the forums to get those conversations going, to drive that change and build momentum that would be quicker than if everybody was kind of doing it on their own.
Yeah, absolutely. And to that point, for any listeners, obviously, as Helen mentioned, I think already somewhere near 80 of our retailers are on board with the Climate Action Roadmap. But we would love for, you know, all of our members and beyond to be involved. And if you're interested in finding out any more, you can look it all up at brc.org.uk/climate roadmap. Helen, thank you very much for coming and talking to us today, and hopefully hear from you soon.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Helen Dickinson there, Chief Executive of the British Retail Consortium. Now, those listeners following trade news at the moment will know that tensions have been running high between the UK and the EU, with the UK threatening to trigger Article 16 of the Northern Ireland Protocol. I sat down with our trade policy advisor and director of the Northern Ireland Retail Consortium, Aidan Connolly, to find out what this all means. And I'm joined now by Aidan Connolly of the NIRC. Aidan, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Great. So we've been hearing quite a lot in the news over the last few days about triggering of Article 16 of the Northern Ireland Protocol. Can you give us a little bit of an idea of what the what Article 16 is and what triggering it could mean?
Okay, so Article 16 is a unilateral safeguard measure, which is in the protocol. And basically what it means, if there are serious practical problems, if there are things like diversion of trade or societal problems, that safeguard within Article 16 means that one side or the other side could suspend parts of the deal. Now, some people are saying that Article 16 is this big beacon of hope and it means you can get rid of the protocol. That's not what it is at all. In fact, Article 16 is there to make a couple of tweaks, short-term tweaks at that, to allow the protocol to continue pretty much as is. Now, the UK are saying that they think that because of diversion of trade and because of societal problems, that the threshold, that test on whether or not Article 16 can be triggered is has been met, and therefore they think that they're justified to do it. But the EU believes they're not justified to do it, that there isn't the reason for it. Now, they haven't done it, and it's kind of, I always talk about this, like it's the big shiny red button. If you ever watch Father Ted, when Dougal is on the flight and there's a big red button that says, do not press, that's kind of where the UK is at the minute. They're looking at the red button, they're going, shall we press it, shall we not? But they're using it kind of as a negotiating tactic, and that's to get leverage with the EU. Now, what it does is, you know, a lot of people are holding it up to say that Article 16 will provide, you know, what business needs. That's not true. In fact, there's no one who at the moment is not sending to Northern Ireland is suddenly going to start sending to Northern Ireland because of the Article 16 being in place. The UK can use it surgically to change a couple of things, but because we're already in those grace periods, it's really hard to find what exactly they would change. Or they could use it as a blanket and try and remove the majority of the protocol provisions anyway. If they do that, EU will go absolutely bonkers, I believe is the technical term.
When you say absolutely bonkers, what kind of fallout could we be expecting?
So this is where we had a wonderful, in fact, for those of you who want to go to our trade community hub, we'll be putting up the recording very soon. But we did a webinar in this past week, which was unbelievably good. Professor Catherine Bernard from Cambridge University, Professor Chris McCrudden from Queen's University, and Professor Billy Mello Ayocha from Queen's University in Belfast, talking about what Article 16 means, what the ramifications are, and what could actually happen. So on what could actually happen, if the EU see this as an infraction, which they will do, then they will continue with those infraction proceedings, which they have paused at the moment. They paused those over the summer at the same time as the unilateral extension to the grace period happened to allow for negotiations. It would pretty much mean a formal end of these negotiations, because as they say in The Godfather, they would go to the mattresses, that we'd be in a pretty much a war situation, a trade war, I mean. And how quickly could they do things? Well, for that sort of widespread WTO MFN most favored nation tariff, you're talking, it could take anything from 6 months to 9 months. The real nuclear button is they try to repudiate the Northern Ireland Protocol and repudiate the TCA, which would take a year from the trigger of that. But working backwards, you can have some tariff, sort of that ramping up, a graduated response, probably around 3 months. And you could have fishing tariffs between 7 and 14 days. And it's, wow, it really is that sort of quick. However, while a lot of people are concentrating on the tariffs, the thing that I'm really interested in is non-tariff barriers. and though especially soft non-tariff barriers. So we already have customs and SPS controls and that sort of thing that are going to come in. But this isn't just about Northern Ireland. It then becomes about the whole of the UK. So if goods are coming EU to GB or even going GB to EU, suddenly you get the French customs guys and the French SPS guys who want to check things just a little bit longer. And there are delays that affect just-in-time supply chains. Plus, if there's a lot of delays, you end up with a lot of European lorry drivers who don't want to come to the UK in the first place. We actually know what delays can do. If you remember, at the end of last year, start of this year, whenever there was COVID problems and lorry drivers couldn't get either way across the channel, it's not just about the just-in-time supply chain, which obviously affects freshness, availability, and it affects cost, because delays mean costs about £1.27 per every minute that a lorry is caught in delays. But on top of that, there's not just about the finished goods, it's about ingredients. And it took 6 or 8 weeks after the disruption at the end of last year for food production to get back where it was, because you need 100% of your ingredients to be there at the right time, in the right place, for you to be able to produce what you need to produce. So there's a real sort of concern about how, before we even get to tariffs, that we would see a real squeeze on just-in-time supply chains, a real squeeze on consumer choice, and a real squeeze on consumer pockets as well, as prices would go up to reflect those new trade frictions. Because you got to remember, as I always say, where there's friction, there's cost.
So there sounds like there's quite a few things for retailers to be worried about there. Are there any sort of incoming milestones? Are we just sort of waiting to see if it gets triggered? What's on the horizon?
If you'd asked me last week, I would probably said 95%. That it was going to be triggered. I am going to do a bit of name dropping now. I had dinner with Lord Frost last night, would you believe? I actually did. I was sitting beside him. it kind of left with a wee bit more hope in the fact that he is committed to doubling down on those negotiations, that he is, he does want to get that negotiated solution. And that's, again, that we have always said that, you know, for those four things that we need, that stability, certainty, simplicity and affordability, the only way to do it is with agreement with the EU and the UK together. But it's still there. And he's very clear that he thinks that the threshold's been made and it is sitting in his back pocket. So for me, there's less likely than it was. I have a little bit more hope, because quite simply, where there is talking, there is hope. But there's still pretty wide gulf apart between the two parties, the EU and the UK, and both sides still need the move. I suppose, you know, a lot of people, there's a narrative out there that the EU papers are perfect. They're not. There's another narrative that the EU papers are terrible, and they're not. There is progress that has been made. But as it stands at the moment, unless there's more movement, it won't suit. The supply chains, and you got to remember, Northern Ireland consumers have half the discretionary income of Great British households, and therefore we need this to work. We need to remove that friction, and to keep costs down, and to keep that choice.
Aidan, thank you very much for coming on. It sounds like there's a lot to watch out for. Hopefully some good news or some positive developments in the future. Thanks for coming on, mate.
Thank you.
That was Aidan Connolly there, and by the sounds of it, some very interesting times ahead, to say the least. As we mentioned there, you can find out more by visiting brc.org.uk/communities/trade. That's to watch our webinar on the topic and to get any future resources, insight and guidance on all things trade related. Now, finally, we turn to my conversation with Sophie DeSalis for what's in the news and how things are looking heading into Christmas. So I'm joined now by Sophie DeSalis from our corporate affairs team. Sophie, how's it going?
Yeah, it's good. Thanks, Will. How are you doing?
Very, very well. Very well. So jumping into things, listeners may or may not know that at the BRC, we monitor stats on things like retail footfall, sales and shop vacancies. Can you give us a bit of an update on how things are looking ahead of what is a very critical time, probably the most critical time for the retail industry?
Yeah, so it's been a difficult 18 months for retailers going in and out of lockdown, but we are starting to see strong sales this year as a whole, with retailers finally getting back onto their feet post-pandemic, and particularly as we enter the golden quarter, which is, you know, Christmas. Our October retail sales monitor saw sales increase by 0.6%, non-food online sales at 40% penetration, which is down 7.3% on last month, but still much higher than pre-pandemic levels. Meanwhile, footfall is still down over 13%, but this is the best in Europe. It does show that we are on the road to recovery. Obviously, we need to err on the side of caution. Retail businesses aren't confident this will last and the demand will continue into 2022. There are still huge challenges ahead with higher prices being faced by consumers, especially with increasing cost pressures, and the consumers will ultimately pay the price.
So there's a few roadblocks on the way there. Obviously, I also know that shop vacancies are still fairly high. What are the numbers there?
So we're seeing vacancies at 14.5%, which equates to 1 in 7 stores. So this is just a reflection of the impact of the pandemic, particularly with lockdown, seeing many stores not reopen. It just shows the need for investment in our high streets, which should be on the government's levelling up agenda.
We've been pushing really hard on business rates for a long time now at the BRC. What did we learn in the autumn budget? And was there anything to help retailers in the coming months?
Yeah, so we've been pushing for a business rates review. And whilst we enjoyed a business rates holiday during the pandemic, we knew what was coming. And unfortunately, we did not get everything we wanted in the autumn budget. It was a bit of a mixed bag. And while we got name checked by the Chancellor in his speech, we did not get what was promised in the 2019 government's manifesto. So while government's 50% bridging relief for 2022 to 2023 may be beneficial for the smallest businesses, it's going to do little to our members. They are the businesses who pay 2/3 of retail business rates and employ 1.5 million people. Interestingly, our business rates survey showed that 4 in 5 retailers will see shop closures if the business rates review does not provide the reform that we need. The government reform was not enough and the burden is still there.
Following on from our retail crime survey in May, we've been advocating for more protections for shop workers to the government. In fact, before then as well. I hear that there's some news from the House of Lords. What can you tell us about that?
So we've been campaigning for a new law to protect shop workers from violence and abuse, even prior to our survey that came out in May. And our survey just confirmed what we've been seeing, which is rising cases of violence and abuse. In fact, it found that there were 455 incidents of violence and abuse every day, which is quite frankly just not part of the job, with workers being spat on, threatened with knives, and this has only accelerated with the pandemic. This also costs retailers a total of 2.5 billion over the year. So we've since been supported by MPs on an amendment to the Police Crime Sentencing and Courts Bill, which is going through the House of Lords at the moment and will be debated on Wednesday.
Nice, awesome. And finally, big on the agenda at the moment is, of course, COP26. We've now got the agreement, which is great, but what were the major takeaways from the agreement? And is there anything in there that specifically that retailers should be aware of?
Yeah, it was encouraging to see the commitments of government and businesses around the world playing their parts in solving the climate crisis, not least that on deforestation, which aligned with the early milestones of our climate action roadmap, that is pledging to stop deforestation by 2030. And COP was also a huge reminder to consumers of the gravity of climate change and the role that they can play. Our recent report with PwC showed better choices by consumers, supported by retailers, can make a huge difference. That being said, the real test is delivering on these commitments and making real change. So we need to make a practical difference in supply chains and our stores. And whilst the roadmap is already helping the retail industry on its journey, we need government support and cooperation to help us get to net zero by 2040.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for joining us on the podcast, Sophie. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Will.
And thanks again to Sophie for joining me on the podcast. As a little update, as that was recorded a couple of days ago, the debate continues in the House of Lords. This is on the amendments to the crime bill, but no resolution as yet. We're expecting more news on Monday. And that's it for the podcast today. If you'd like to find out more about the work we do at the BRC, once again, do visit us at brc.org.uk. You can connect with us on LinkedIn and Twitter, and hope to catch you next time on Radio Retail. Goodbye for now.